So I was just saying that we had sent out, I sent out congratulations and invitations to the CSEP Phase 2 winners, inviting those that have not given talks on the Climate Literacy Network talk, before to give talk, to schedule talks, and then to thank the others for their talks in the past, and indicating that we can hope that they will give a talk in the future once their projects are more mature. I also let them know that Clean Core has been funded, and we hope to engage them with those activities. So that's the invitation went out. So if, I don't know if there's other groups that you think we Scott and we're starting and I were starting to brainstorm, and I sent out my email earlier today that if you have suggestions for talks that you would like to either give or suggest we engage, you can let us know. So are there other announcements?
No, but Tamara, I think I missed. This is Linda. What is the Clean Core project? I probably missed that call.
Okay. So this is probably a longer – this has been a longer-term conversation, and Frank Niepold's on the phone too, so we've been engaged. But when we put together the initial proposal for Clean to NSF, one of the pieces was to create a sustainability piece where we would have identify a mechanism by which we could maintain activities afterwards. And then Frank has facilitated our – well, Frank and I, over the course of the last year, defined what Clean Core meant. What are the minimum level of activities to maintain the quality of the collection, to maintain the process of being able to review resources so that with that core funding, we can more easily engage with various partners to review the materials or support them in other ways that may seem appropriate. Through a very rapid set of proposal writing and Frank's creative engagement with the people at NOAA, we now have for FY13 have funded Clean Core activity. So what this will do is there's other minor pieces of this work, but the main two pieces are to maintain the quality of the collection, so we'll be revisiting resources to make sure that, on a rotating basis, to make sure that they are, and this goes beyond just broken links, to make sure that they address the needs of the community, and then to have in place at a low level the review process. So we will have one review camp, probably towards, probably on the order of 2/3 of the way through the year. We will review a small number of activities with that funding, and then if there are those of you who have other materials that you would like to have reviewed and have and are putting together proposals for doing such, then we can include, partner on and include a budget that would help support reviewing additional resources. So there's these two main pieces, and Frank, you might want to elaborate on it.
So there's maybe another way to think of this, and that was Linda, right?
Yeah.
So the basic idea is this, is that, the NSF funding allowed us to do something that was innovative and needed, but kind of prototyped, and then through the process determine whether or not it was worthy of going beyond the NSF funding. And so our determination was Clean was pivotal and successful and awesome, and that it met our needs so we could continue flowing money into it. But we wanted to position it in a way that if it was existed beyond, so it transitions beyond the initial funding into more of an operational, ongoing, sustained, and reliable resource. Because a lot of the stuff that's developed through all these wonderful grants kind of spin up, and then there's no support for it beyond that. Right. We've all seen this over and over again. And so really what we're exploring is how to strategically and kind of take something that is really important and keep it going beyond its initial stage and grow it. But the idea was if we kept it external, not a contract from NOAA, that if we could get other money from other initiatives, but we just want to make sure that it's able to exist beyond that phase, and then it could go and get money from other things to really do the important work that's expensive. But if that foundation is maintained, then that's possible. Usually, you know, once the grant funding runs out, the team disbands and they pick up new projects and they're no longer available. And we definitely didn't want that to happen. So that's kind of, you know, there's two pieces to it. The core is one thing, but the core plus, or the expanded, the outer core, or whatever you want to call it, you know, in your internal Earth dynamics, is really the interesting piece. And one of the other thrusts here is that clean is deep and rich enough that it can really shift more into a marketing outreach engagement strategy than a building strategy. Not to say that building is important, but you see where we're going here?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what that's all about.
Thank you.
So, and to you, one of the things that kind of pointed out to me last week, we had a clean virtual review camp last Wednesday, that I think I mentioned on our call last week. And in previous attempts to review educational resources, it's been really, really difficult to actually effectively and consistently review resources and in any kind of numbers that were needed. We had a four-hour review camp yesterday and passed. We looked at, I got on the order of 92 resources and passed 68. And so this is it's a very efficient process. Nobody had to travel anywhere. It was 4 hours on the phone, and the people involved did have to do some work in looking at the resources ahead of time. But it's an incredible, it compared to all previous efforts, and this kind of goes back to the Lisi days, the Digital Library for Earth Systems Education, and all the efforts to talking about how to review those resources. It's been a very hard nut to crack, and I think we have done it with the clean review process that we've put in place. So for those of you who were involved in the review camp last Wednesday, thank you very much.
I completely agree, Tamara. It was a spectacular success.
Well, congrats to you guys. That's great.
Well, the other thing that we've found, this is Scott, and I was involved last Wednesday too, is we found that the review team, or sort of the pre-review camp team, is getting much, much better at ensuring that resources that are brought forward are likely to pass. So I think, if I remember correctly, we had like an 18% failure rate, which is actually much smaller than we've had before. So we're seeing much better resources, and the ones that we're passing on for review are much more likely to be favored, you know, review favorably.
Yeah. The other thing that we're doing now, and this will evolve into more into what the Clean Core activities are, is in the past, Clean has identified resources that are out there. And some of you have resources that you've suggested to us, but the bulk of the collection to this point are we've had our team, in which we call them resource collectors, have gone out and looked at pools of resources that are out there on various websites, and then identified them into the review tool and they've gone through the review process. But we're evolving that, and we're actually piloting now through the fall an iterative review process with people who are developing materials now. This is kind of going to be a cross between what you might consider a peer review process for a journal, where reviewers review a paper, and then the editor sends the questions back to an author. In this case, it would be we go through the first two rounds of our review and send those comments on to the developer, who now is somebody who we've been engaged with, that we've identified, and we iterate with them so that they can improve their resource, improve its quality, and so to help assure that it would get into the collection. And then it would go to a review panel. There may be additional questions that they need to address. But and then with this iterative approach, we're engaging people who are developing resources now. And one of the things that we're hoping this will enable is, as each time we increase our collection, we do a gap analysis. We identify where we have holes in the collection, so that developers can see where there are holes and develop resources to fill those holes. So this is another avenue by engaging with the developers rather than just identifying resources that are out there.
Right.
And so we're going to be shifting from mostly doing just the searching for existing resources to doing more of this iterative review process.
And
we're piloting
this. Yeah. When will that commence?
But we're actually beginning that now, but we don't have a whole lot of money to do this, but we need to sort of define the process, and the way you define the process is by trying it with a small number of. So we put out a call that I put out an email to the Climate Literacy Network and to the tri-agency listserv probably on the order of a month ago. And the way this has worked out, it's been kind of interesting because we had about 15 people respond that they were interested in participating in the iterative review process, but then it turns out that only 5 of them actually had resources that they had that could actually go through such a process. So people are interested in it in terms of the future, but we really need to get in place to test out how this process is actually going to work. And so that when we get to next January, which is when the Clean Core funding really kicks in, we'll have this process defined and can move forward. So that's kind of what we're aiming for now. So I think we're going to have, at least we'll continue to search for a few more. I think we were searching for on the order of 10 to 12 resources that we would do this with.
I did respond positively to that if it's the same process, Tamara, but I didn't hear back. I heard back that I'd be part of something, and that's why I was wondering if this was it.
This is it. So who's talking? I'm just not recognizing your voice.
Linda.
Okay, Linda. So, yeah, so if you haven't heard from Anna, you should have. So you can, I don't know that she's just sort of putting together the list of people we're engaging with. So I would email her again because I know that you're supposed to be part of this process.
Right. Okay, yeah, she did get back to me and say I'd be part of it. That's why I wasn't sure since you said it had started. So I'll get back in touch with her again.
Okay.
Thanks.
Amber, there's another feature of Clean right now, I'm not sure if people know this. We're now starting to tag resources with respect to the new energy principles, essential principles. So we've been going back, as you certainly know, and re-tagging the old resources, the ones that we've done in the last 3 years with respect to the energy principles. But the team is now starting to review new materials with respect to the principle. So it's going to be a shift from our sort of provisional energy awareness principles that we kind of created ourselves to the sort of definitive or official energy principles now. So, and that's going to also, you mentioned the gap analysis. That's something that we certainly talked about yesterday, is that will be another thing we will do, is do a little bit of gap analysis in terms of whether we're covering all the energy principles too. So I think it's pretty clear we're going to do energy with respect to climate, if that makes any sense. We're not going to try to cover all energy ideas, but those that are particularly relevant to climate science.
You know, Scott,
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Hello? Did I lose you guys?
Nope.
Okay.
We're still here.
So,
go ahead, Frank. I don't know.
There's an interesting opportunity that I'm not, when we're talking about this, that I was talking with Anna Gold about the some of the work we could do is to, you know, as we've done all this work, is to go back in and look at the topics, because mm-hmm. climate literacy and energy literacy are a little bit of a wonky thing relative to, you know, educators, and that's the whole reason we came up with the topics. That they're more like, you know, I'm teaching El Nino, but you might have a hard time finding El Nino in climate and energy literacy. if you follow where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but, you know, taking a kind of a fresh-eyed look after we developed those a long time ago to see if they're still the right topics. You know, just yesterday we had the release of the Arctic sea ice minimum.
Yes.
But you can't find Arctic sea ice in either our topics or in the climate literacy. So it's kind of hard to find. So you have to use like keyword search. And it just seems to be, you know, we have to evolve or update our taxonomy or our vocabulary, whatever you want to call it. And so I'd be interested.
Well, we do have to have a balance between being too specific in those vocabularies. But there is the open text search box so that you could put in Arctic sea ice and you get returns.
Yeah. So I'm with you with the balance, but I think, you know, just a tweaking might be a good thing to look at.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We do use specificity sometimes. And so it just seems that we've maybe missed the mark a couple places.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's something the network would be interested in looking at. You know, so there are some pieces. I sent you guys an email about the difference between climate change and climate. And we have our taxonomy is pretty climate change focused, and the literacy framework goes the full gamut of climate variability, and change.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but these are tweaks that I think the network would possibly have some interesting feedback on.
Yeah, it might be useful to use one of our teleconferences to explore some of these areas.
Mm-hmm. This is Karen, and it sounds like the direction that you're going and the strategy that you're pursuing is really nice, and I want to compliment all of you. I don't know whether any of you have seen the NSTA listing of webinars that they've just started announcing for the fall, but they're led by the real leaders in science education, folks from Rick Duschel to Joe Krajicek and, you know, Brian Reeser, the whole panoply of science education leaders, and they're having one on each one of the practices of science. And having seen that, one of my questions, and I apologize, Tamara, this is a naive question, but in the gap analysis and the kinds of things that Frank is talking about in terms of updating, has there been an attempt to look at the practices of science with regard to the gap analysis and the clean collection?
Scott, what do you think?
The gap analysis is really focused on the...
Certainly not in the sense, say, like the Next Generation Science Standards. We certainly have not been looking at practices. There's a little in there, and part of it is just what's embedded in the essential principles. So, for example, Principle 5 that relates to observations and modeling, that's probably where we would be tagging things. But I would say we have not thought out exercises that are very specifically focused on a particular kind of practices. It would be very interesting, and I know we have not done this, but it would be very interesting to start to go back to some of those and actually code them with respect to practices, especially the seven science and engineering practices that are part of the the Next Generation Standards, but it's actually part of the framework.
Well, I think that we have only done the gap analysis with respect to the climate literacy essential principles. So there are potentially other ways of slicing the gap analysis. But in addition to that, I see your point about the practices of science. I would suggest that we wait until those are finalized and then potentially address them with respect to the Next Generation Science Standards, which would include
that's
those practices.
To do it.
Right, right. And that's what this series of webinars is about, is developing understanding of what those practices are in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So looking to the future, I think it's an idea worth keeping in mind. Because I'm sure educators will be looking for materials that, you know, delve into those practices.
I think so, too.
You and I fully
I'm having trouble seeing your understanding any of your words.
Yeah, Frank, you're cutting out. Whoa.
Frank, like 90% of your words are being cut out. We can't understand anything you're saying at the moment.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, Frank, you're in the swimming pool, I think.
He's only playing at work.
I think he's snorkeling.
He caught you red-handed.
Well, the other thing I can tell people about is the AGU meeting sessions are now being organized, and so that's moving along very well. We're going to have sessions on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of AGU week. So that's December 3rd, 4th, and 5th. For anybody who can come and participate, it's going to be quite an interesting So we'll have the oral sessions in the morning, at least that's the way it's planned now, with the poster sessions in the afternoon. So that should be really interesting.
Tamara, I had one more question about that, which is what is the student paper liaison person, and do they have to be physically present?
All right, so what this is I've gotten a little bit more information about that. There is a student paper competition, so they want student papers to be judged. And I've asked how. So when a student has to be, the student has to be. I think both the first author and the presenter. And when a student does submit an abstract, there's a box to check that you may or may not noticed when you were if you were submitting your own abstract. Where if you're a student, you're supposed to check a particular box. And then the liaison is supposed to be the person who figures out how whatever student papers are in their session are judged. Now, I've never had a student paper in my session, so I've never actually judged them. I know Susan Burr has judged a student paper before. I have asked, since the abstracts don't say, or none of my abstracts say a student submitted it, so all that means is that either there are no student papers in my session or it's not indicated on the abstract. I have asked, and I was told that AGU will let us know if there are student papers in our session, and then the liaison's the person that gets the forms that have to be filled out for judging it. For those of you, the reason this is an issue right now is in order to organize a session, meaning deciding which talks are going to be oral and which are going to be posters and what order they come in, you have to identify the person who is the liaison. And what that means is you don't necessarily have to be the judge, but you are the one who's going to make sure they get judged by somebody. So that's what that is. It's more of an organizing that, yes, somebody from your session is going to make sure that happens if there are any student papers.
So they don't have to be there.
And as long as you arrange for somebody else to be there to do the judging.
Oh, no, so they are actively part of the judging process then. I thought you said they were organized.
Not necessarily. Like, for example, I put my own name down in my session because I wanted to see what you can't look at anything in the tool to organize a session until you identify that person. And so I put my own name down, but I could end up saying, okay, Karen McNeil is the person that's going to actually do the judging. I'm just making sure it happens.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So if you can't be there, you just have to make sure that somebody else is. Now, I think that since we don't have to submit these sessions until September 4th, if you want to identify somebody else, you can change the name from yours to somebody else's before September 4th. After September 4th, you just have to make sure somebody's going to do it, even if you can't.
But you don't know when that judging takes place during the AGU week, if the person has to be there to judge them.
Well, it just is going to be when the session is. If it's a poster, it'll be during the poster session. If it's an oral, whoever's judging it has to go to the oral presentation and listen to it.
Okay. Thanks.
Sorry, guys. We seem to have moved on, but there was one point. If I'm back on a different line.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead, Frank.
The point, part of back to the clean core idea. Was because Clean Core exists, you know, keeping it going allows us to do other things, and we know that the work to prepare the connection between the Next Generation Science Standards and the work we've done in Clean and the Climate Literacy Guide There's a lot of really rich work that's going to have to be done, but what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to find additional funding to do a lot of those things, to connect to the practices and the cross-cutting ideas, and really, you know, there's a lot of change to the educational materials that the new framework and the standards allude to that is a little bit broader and different than what CLEAN was built to do, but I think, you know, that work could be done if we could find the funding to do it, and I think it would be important and rich work, but it's a lot, and it's just not going to happen by itself. So, but because CLEAN will continue beyond December, it sets us up to be able to take care of and take advantage of those opportunities and really do good and interesting work.
That makes sense.
Yes, and we're already planning to do some additional proposals for CLEAN. So that's in the works. And I've had conversations with NSF program officers that said having the CLEAN Corps funding is a huge plus.
Right.
So.
But I think you guys get the point of that because we have that foundation, then we can go off and do and continue to build as opposed to get scattered all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's going backwards.
That's okay. We were just talking about the AGU meeting, and that was a clarification question I was addressing.
Sure.
Are there any other questions or comments?
Just the last one, the little one I have is we are still in the process of finalizing the Spanish translation issues. And, you know, Scott, you're on the line. Hopefully we've agreed to kind of keep ocean and climate together, and looks like we'll have a final language soon, whatever that final word is. And then I'll start, you know, formatting and laying it out and sending out Word documents. But, you know, it's clear that the community wants this. So we're committed to getting it done soon, like I hope weeks.
Yes. I agree.
Good. Karen, do you have any updates about the NAAAW meeting?
Yeah.
Tamara, you're warbling a little bit on the sound for me, so I didn't quite catch. I think you're talking to me, but I didn't catch.
Yes,
what
I was asking.
That.
Can you hear me better now?
I think so.
Okay, I was just asking if you had any updates about the NAAE meeting.
Oh, thank you. That's much better. Whatever you did. I know that the early bird registration ended yesterday. I know that they're still accepting revisions in people's descriptions of their sessions and changes in people presenting and so forth until the end of the month. And then the schedule and all the information will start going into the program. So people need to update any information about their sessions by the end of the month. They're still accepting ads for the program and exhibit space requests. And I can't tell you the exact number, but I was really impressed with the number of sessions and size of conference this year. So I'm sure it's going to be a great conference in Oakland.
Karen, would you mind speaking just a moment about the research evaluation? I never remember the name of it. That happens in conjunction with
the research symposium.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The research symposium.
The research symposium occurs on Tuesday, October 9th, and Wednesday, October 10th. And it's a special two-day session for, obviously, researchers in environmental education. There's a large student component, and there are usually sessions that get out both recent findings in research and methodological discussions about the kinds of approaches that should be used and new angles that are being pursued. There's also typically a session that has to do with critiquing student research and that sort of student support and expanding thinking in research.
Karen, when you say critiquing student research, you mean student educational research?
student research in environmental education.
Okay.
So, for instance, I don't know who's presenting in that research symposium and what the specifics of the program look at yet, but that program is online, so you can look at the program itself. But, for instance, Martha Monroe down at the University of Florida has a group that's developing some climate change instructional materials specific for the southeastern United States. And they've been pilot testing some draft materials and revising them and looking at the kinds of frameworks that are being addressed by those lessons. I don't know, but people like that may be presenting and looking at their work. There may be other people who are looking at research in terms of outcomes. Typically, the people who are working on the National Environmental Literacy Assessment let people know about their latest work and findings in terms of their analysis of the NELA assessments that have gone on in the last several years. So it's a whole range of work from theoretical environmental education research to practical on-the-ground kinds of things. And the program is on the website at naaee.net for the whole research symposium.
Go ahead,
Frank.
No, it's fine, please.
Go ahead, Karen.
Hello, Frank.
Yeah.
This is Jane, and there was one session I remember attending also that was on learning progressions about carbon and how carbon is distributed through the biosphere. So they're looking not just at the science of it, but what are conceptions about that and how do those conceptions get connected.
The reason I asked that was because of that exact the richness of the work that's done in the environmental education community in this area sometimes is disconnected from a lot of the practice that goes on, and I think, you know, drawing those two connections. I mean, Karen, you had said at a symposium last year that why did we make some of the mistakes we made early on in climate education, where the environmental education research clearly says, you know, the information deficit model is not a way to go, and yet we kind of started that way. We didn't really look at the research and let it inform our practice as much as we should, and so connecting those dots a little bit more intentionally from now on, if not, you know, in the near past, it would be a good thing. And so, you know, if there's more things we can do to draw those connections, I would think, you know, maybe inviting some of the people who are doing that, you just highlighted in the network, and really sharing those findings and stepping up our research base, I think would be a good thing.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'm not directly involved.
Andy Anderson would be a great person. I don't know if we can get him or not, but he's heading up
a
lot of that learning progressions research.
My guess is that just as the program for the conference is in the final throes of being finalized, my guess is that the program for the research symposium is also in the same state. So I think to add new elements to the program, someone would need to contact and talk to the program chair for the research symposium this year.
No, I was thinking it was referring to possibly having somebody from that's going to be presenting there to present on the Climate Literacy Network at some point.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking too.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No,
we don't want to change the symposium. Let's let that keep going.
We don't want to rock the NAAEE boat at this point.
No, please no. But I think leveraging and expanding the research practice into our into our practice, mm-hmm. I think is really the point I was making.
Very good.
We can. I don't know, Karen, if you have a view into Andy Anderson was mentioned, and I know him.
Yes.
But if there's others we might potentially invite to present on the Climate Literacy Network, that would really help a lot. I think that we would get a lot of people participating in such a presentation. You know, so we should try to identify some additional people if it seems relevant.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with the framework for assessing environmental literacy, but that sort of is a synthesis of a lot of the research into one place, and I don't know whether that might be of interest to the group. But I'll be
Karen. This is Roberta Burns here. I think that is always the guiding sort of framework that I use in developing programming. I start there first, and then if it's about climate change, then I'm also using the climate literacy principles. But have we had a presentation of the framework on this list
anytime
in the last year?
I know, but Karen, you could probably do that.
She probably knows them by the back of her hand.
Yeah.
Well, sure, you know, I'd be glad to do that if you think it's useful for the group.
Oh, yeah.
So, Karen, the main thing that I think is really that I found out that Mila that was really useful was an expansion between the dispositions and competencies,
yep,
as opposed to just the knowledge piece.
Yep.
There's a lot of really richness in the NELA work that is very, very relevant to our work. And, you know, I think that the work that Tom and Joe and others in that framework in Bora is absolutely relevant to our framework, especially when you're talking about national assessments, you know, which is expanding on, you know, the Six Americas work and all that kind of stuff. That's different than our work. And so I think that, you know, some portions of our work, I should say. So anyway, I would absolutely, but also the research base that went into that, you know,
yeah,
that might be a little bit of a different talk.
Seems like
okay.
It'd be so helpful to have all of these cross-referenced with the new next generation standards, climate literacy, and NELA ones, you know, they, so that
we'll be trying to get there. We'll be working towards getting there.
But you raise a really rich and interesting point. I don't know who just said that. But
Linda.
Thank you. Hey, Linda, you know, I mean, Karen, I really like that idea because there are some pieces that are in the NELA that I don't think stand out as prominently in the Next Generation Science Standards. And I think the whole idea is dispositions or whatever it is. I can't get it right today.
Dispositions, yep.
It's not 100% overlap, and I think, you know, the science education community might not be totally fully steeped in the environmental education world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an easy statement to make.
And from the perspective of, you know, clean documents being developed and so forth, anybody trying to assign standards that are being met by these curricular materials and so forth would probably find it a huge help to, you know, have that kind of cross-referencing so that they can be able to broadcast it to different audiences with the same product.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd get better dissemination, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And alignment. You know, so it's easier to ingest because it meets the standard requirements.
Right.
Okay, great. Is there anybody on the phone who has can give an update for GSA, the Geological Society? We do have a number of climate literacy sessions there also. We have two specific sessions, one on activities, which includes informal, formal education and outreach, and then one on research and evaluation. And that's going to occur at the beginning of November. So we just organized those sessions. Okay, any other comments, questions? If you think of other potential speakers, I've been writing down the ones that have been suggested so far. But if there are other additional speakers that people can suggest, we would like to put together our schedule for this coming academic year.
maybe, I don't know if you're interested in content as well as, you know, educational initiatives, but this is the last year for the West Antarctic Ice Sheet initiatives in Antarctica, and they'll be coming back in February. It's possible, you know, if you'd like to know the outcomes and what they were looking at climate-wise from that, we could do a speaker in the spring.
Okay.
I like that. And to piggyback on that, you know, the Arctic sea ice minimum just hit its new record low yesterday. And,
really? Okay.
Yep.
Well,
I knew it was
and it's not done yet. It's still going.
That's true.
So mid-September when it it's probably going to hit its bottom. How far low below the 2007 number it's going to be is still a work in progress. But the reason I raise it is that, you know, I'm going to be reaching out to Walt Myers later today about briefing another group, and I'm wondering if, you know, just having a science update like what you did with Glenda, you put forth, wouldn't be a half good one somewhere in the week, you know, the climate literacy call the week of the you know, the 21st, whatever that Tuesday is, wouldn't be a half bad thing. They can do it in their sleep now.
Yeah, no, I know. We've had Walt give talks a number of times. That would be great. I would like to have. It would be good. Scott, we tentatively have identified somebody to talk that particular day, but we can sort of figure that out. So, but asking Walt, I think having Walt give a talk sometime in September would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then on along those lines, you know, we have people like Deke Arntz, who does State of the Climate work at the NCDC, who's great. You know, State of the Climate.
Say his name again.
Deke Derek Arntz, and you know, just the State of the Climate System. You know, I imagine you guys would like to be able to ask these guys, you know, what's going on, what happened in the past year, and what's happening right now, and what's the lookout forward. I think it's always good to have, you know, have access to those. And I imagine there are other agencies and organizations on the call that have people too.
Is the major commit, Tamara, an hour presentation? Is that what you would like?
Yeah, that's it's basically we use the venue of the Climate Literacy Network call, so it's basically an hour. Linda, who would be the person? Who would be the person from the West Antarctic Ice Sheet, or is this somebody that you would contact for us?
Oh, I'll contact. I'm going to see them all the second week in September, and I just thought if you would like someone.
That would be great. Yes, please. Go ahead and pursue that.
Multiple principal investigators. I also was thinking, though, of a very sharp graduate student that's been involved for years, and one of my goals is to try to get the emerging scientists to be more engaged in outreach. So I don't know whether you're open to that, but they're...
Oh, sure.
You know, so there's a lot of folks that could do it, and
right.
I just thought
we're also very open to shared presentation, so that
okay.
can happen too.
Okay, and can I tell them like what's an average call-in, you know, amount of people? Is there such a thing?
Oh yes, I can tell you that during the academic year, we range between 15 and 25 people on the phone at a time. We've had a high of 52, was the highest number we've had. But say, and we would advertise. So the science talks, I usually send the email reminder just to the Climate Literacy Network. But for the actual science talks, I would also send it to the tri-agency group also. So we'd advertise it much more broadly. So we had on the order when. Richard Alley gave his presentation, and Jeff Heinstiles.
Right.
They had on the order of 35 people.
Okay.
So that can get that kind of gives you the bracketed range.
Okay.
You know, Linda, one other thing that I would use in the pitch to say whoever talks to Walt is that the network is not comprised of individual practitioners, and as much as we're more like. Organizations or we represent networks we represent groups of people, and major initiatives and things of that nature. So it's not, it's a little bit of a different community. So a small number actually has a larger impact if you get a kind of an estimate of the value of your time.
The presentations, when they're done, can they be, archived both on like a NOAA or a IDPO site as well as
absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, so it's they don't have to. And scientists frequently ask, you know, where's their material going to end up? So.
Yeah, no, you can. I mean, we'll just give you the links, and we can send you the audio recording also, and then they have their slides. So, so it can be posted anywhere. That's fine. So, Linda, your follow-up with the West Antarctic Ice Sheet Group, Frank, I can contact Walt Meyer. I know him pretty well.
Sure. Either one. I have to talk to him later today for something else, so I don't know if you wanted to just, however you want.
Okay, go ahead. You can go ahead and mention it to him, and then just let me know, and I can follow up with him.
Sure. Okay, great.
Tamara, this is Roberta in Kentucky. I was curious, because I haven't been as engaged this last 6 months or so with the group. Have we heard anything from the Climate Literacy Partnership of the Southeast? In the last year, it seems like they did a presentation more than a year ago on this group.
You mean CLPSE?
Yeah, CLPSE. And I was in conversation with them last January. They were all energized and excited about their new project, and they were going to get me involved. And I've never heard a peep from them. So I just wonder
well,
if it's
I can,
one
well,
of those
well,
situations
I
where
know
their funding
Karen
ran
McKeel,
out and have the energy. I don't know.
Well, they put in a proposal for the CSEP phase two and did not get funded, but I know Karen McNeil very well, so we can get you engaged with them moving forward, because I've been talking to her about leveraging their partnerships to do some other things that have to do with climate literacy too. So we'll be reaching out to that group and to the CASHI group, which is the Jeff Ryan's group in Florida. Their CSEP phase two was addressing sea level rise and coastlines. So we can certainly ask those groups that haven't given a talk in a while. I think Karen gave a talk maybe about a year ago now.
Tamara, it raises an interesting point because of the CSEP phase two development process, right? They poured a lot of time and energy into these things, and I know, like, Ed Maybach is not done with this proposal, even though he didn't get funded by NSF. He's still shopping, and I imagine,
right.
You know, Jeff,
I think
Karen,
all of them are.
All of everyone who's built this really robust proposal are still shopping, and, you know, if you don't have the money, it's really hard to do a lot. But, I think it would be an interesting, I don't know how comfortable they would be talking about what they're trying to do before they're funded, because then somebody else might take, you know how it works. So they're a little bit tight-lipped until they actually get the idea locked in and funded. But that said, I think, you know, just having a now what conversation, you know, focused on that community of practice, the ones that we know about, you know, are there opportunities that they can help each other or facilitate. I don't know how open the conversation would be, but we've talked about this in a couple different ways.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I can do,
I sent an email out to just the CSEP Phase 2 awardees, but I can certainly send out to those CSEP Phase 1s that did not get funded and offer any way that they might want to leverage the Climate Literacy Network or CLEAN to move their efforts forward. We'd be perfectly happy to partner with them.
Does somebody else have something here?
No, I was just going to concur with that. I guess it's Roberta here. I often wonder what happens with some of these folks that start something and they have this fabulous website and there's apparently a lot going on, but when it comes right down to it, maybe there isn't that much going on because of, you know, lack of funding or whatever. So I think they, CLPSE developed a great strategic plan, but I just don't know what's going on since I talked to them in January. And so it would be interesting to just a follow-up with them.
Okay. Well, certainly.
I think the main thing though is if we can talk about how can we help the, you know, the fulfillment of these plans. The other thing to remember is that NSF had to downscope the amount of funding that they were going to put out. So a lot of the ones that did get awarded at much lower levels. So they had to adjust their budgets, which meant they adjusted their scope. And
as you say, there are a number of things that they wanted to accomplish that I think the members of this group could certainly help with. So I think that's a really good point.
Okay, no, I think that's a great idea. I think we'll see if we can engage these groups and maybe have some of them give lead follow-up discussions on the Climate Literacy Network call.
Just to follow up on that last point, I've asked Peter, how do you say Peter's last name? Tuttingham?
Tuttingham, sorry.
And Scott, you weren't on that call, but just to think about, because the College of Exploration has done a lot of work in facilitating those kinds of conversations, because a one-hour phone call is not enough for some of this. What would be the right venue, the right process, the right tools, without flying everybody all over the country? That's an open question. You know, what would it take to get that done? And then if it costs $4,000, how do we, or $20,000, or whatever, how do we find the money to get that done? And we don't have a long time. It needs to be done sooner rather than later. So just to close that loop, we are starting to think about some of those side conversations.
Yep.
Okay. Any other comments, questions, topics? We are getting close to the end of the hour. So if there are none others, we will then talk again next week.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye now.
Tamara.
Bye.
Bye.
Linda, hi. Can I have about 5 minutes?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you want me to call you?
Yes. But give me about 5 minutes or so.
Will do. Okay. Me too.
All right. Great. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.